members, we're going to call the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform to order. And we do have a quorum present. And members, the first order of business will to move the minutes for March 4th. Representative Freiberg would love to move the minutes. He is excited to have the minutes in front of him today. And members, I just wanted to address, I understand on Friday there was a little bit of a discrepancy on the minutes regarding a roll call vote on one of the bills that we heard. And after reviewing the tape and having staff review the tape, we clarified that the minutes are correct and the votes are accurately recorded. With that being said, I just want to clarify for members that as we do go forward, it is important when you want anything said on the record, particularly your vote, that people speak very clearly into the microphones, that they're audibly heard as they're voting, so there's no discrepancy or confusion going forward. So, members, with that, Representative Freiberg?
Oh, that's okay. Pass.
Okay. Representative Freiberg moves the minutes of March 4th. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The motion prevails. And members, with that, I am going to hand the gavel over to Representative Dean as we take up House File 5.
Thank you, Representative Mack. Please move forward, present House File 5.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Members, House File 5 is a bill dealing with the state-run exchange, also known as MNsure. Members, as it was about 2 years ago from right now that many of us were sitting in this room discussing the creation of MNsure and a state-run exchange. And since then, there's been a lot of learning experiences, a pretty steep learning curve, a fair share of headaches as we've tried to roll out, which was something that was a pretty groundbreaking initiative on the part of the state. We've seen a lot of partnerships, a lot of work done by Department of Human Services, by the health plans here in the state, as our counties, MNIT, as everyone has tried to navigate how this thing should roll out, how to address the many challenges that it has faced, all with the goal of trying to ensure that we are providing affordable health insurance for people in a way that they can accurately access it and therefore get their health care. And so, members, I can walk you through the different provisions of the bill. I do have the A9 amendment, an author's amendment, that would get the bill in the order that I would like to discuss it today. And so, Mr. Chair, I guess first I need to move House File 5. And then from there, I would like to move the A9 amendment to get the bill in the order that I would like to discuss it.
All right. Does members have the amendment in your packet? This will be the author's amendment. Representative Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm trying to think of the best way just organizationally to explain this, but maybe what I can do is I'll walk through the A9 amendment, get that adopted, get the bill in order, and then can cover the other provisions that House File 5 already has in it. So, with that, members, the A9 amendment does a couple of things. The first thing it does is it addresses some of the board composition. Members, it's been a familiar conversation over the past 2 years about who should have originally been put on the board, who was put on the board, and now who we think absolutely needs to be on the board based on some of the challenges that have been presented over the last 2 years. And so this is my attempt at trying to address some of those challenges. This would put a member on the board that would be an insurance producer, two members who are county employees who are involved in the admin of our public health care programs, and then the chief information officer of MNIT, or a designee. So that is what that section would do. Section 6 of the amendment, starting on 2.15, would deal with the conflict of interest standards. And what we're trying to do is bring into line, make sure that the normal conflict of interest standard for all of their public officials applies to members of the MNsure board. The next change takes up one of the legislative auditor recommendations, which would allow for the governor to appoint the executive director of MNSHR. The last, but the next part deals with the provision that was passed with MNSHR that would allow for an active purchaser element, allowing ultimately at some point for MNSHR to have the ability to determine what products can and cannot be sold within the exchange. And so this would take away that capability, the argument being that if a product passes through all the hoops of what Commerce has already dictated for what makes a plan legal to be sold, that that passes muster. And at that point, the MNSHR board has no jurisdiction to determine what can and cannot be sold inside the exchange. And then the very last part of it, members, deals with the Legislative Oversight Committee, specifically what needs to be reported to the Legislative Oversight Committee, and requires that that the Legislative Oversight Committee would meet at least once a quarter throughout the year. So, members, that is the A9 amendment, bringing the bill up to speed with where I would like it to be moving forward. And so with that, Mr. Chair, I move the A9 amendment.
Representative Mack moves the A9 amendment. Are there any questions? Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Are we going to do we want to discuss this now, or
discussion of the A9 amendment? We're going to put it on, and then we'll move forward. But I think we'll probably just move the A9 amendment to get it in the shape that Representative Mack would like it.
Okay, so I could ask my questions afterwards. I mean, there are things about the A9 amendment that I think deserve a lot of discussion. So,
yep, that'll be
however
part
you want
of the
to
bill.
Do it.
So, with that, Representative Mack moves the A9 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The A9 amendment is adopted. Representative Mack, would you like to wrap up with that?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So, just to kind of finish the walkthrough of the bill, so now we know what the A9 had, which is now wrapped into the overall bill, and so I will now cover the other pieces of the bill and what is in House File 5. And I will have an oral amendment, Mr. Chair, and I'll get to that momentarily so that members understand what I'm doing. As you look at House File 5, Section 1 basically asks the Commissioner of Commerce, in consultation with MNSHR and the Legislative Oversight Committee, to apply for a federal waiver that would basically allow consumers to have access to their tax credits and tax subsidies in the event that they would like to purchase their insurance outside of the exchange. And so that would provide for the going for that federal waiver. Section 2, actually, Mr. Chair, this is where my oral amendment is. members, I am going to move that today we actually strike Section 2 from the bill. My original intent was to bring more in line the compensation plan of other commissioner-level employees, that the MNSHR director be brought in line with that. Since the introductory of this bill, there's been a lot of conversation about commissioner salaries and compensation, and so I'm going to do a little bit of work on making sure that what I'm intending to do is actually accomplished in this. And at this point, the way that Section 2 is written, I'm not quite sure that's the case, so I would like to strike Section 2 from the bill today. With that, Mr. Chair, I would move that we strike Section 2 from the from House File 5.
Thank you, Representative Mack. Representative Mack moves an oral amendment to strike Section 2 of the bill. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. All right. The oral amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so moving through the bill then, Section 3 does a couple of things. We're striking some language from statute on lines 3.12 and proceeding on, we're dealing with some of the provisions that were passed 2 years ago that exempted Mincher from some of the open meeting laws that we have in our state. This would strike those exemptions, making sure that Mincher is living up to all other open meeting laws that our other agencies and how we operate around here when it comes to open meeting laws. And then as you move down on line 3.24, we are going to be eliminating a couple of the other exemptions, particularly 16B, which deals with Department of Administrative Oversight. Mincher, when created, was exempted from that standard oversight from the Department of Administration, so we want to reinstate that. And then striking 16C, which deals with the typical procurement process and how contracting is done. Mincher was originally exempted from normal procurement practices, and so we would like to reinstate that and believe that the last 2 years and some of the experiences we have merit that very needed change. And then as we move on in the bill, at the top of page 4, line 4.1, would eliminate the minute exemptions that Mincher was granted when it was created. And this should be familiar to most people. A nearly unanimous vote last year on the floor with an amendment from Representative Kahn made this same motion to ensure that Mincher is no longer exempt from minute oversight. And then as you continue to move down this section, as we go into section 4 of the bill, deals with the compensation plan, again, for the director of Mincher, and basically is ensuring that it operates under the normal compensation plan and protects Minnesota taxpayers from paying out bonuses that are not merited, and brings it in line with the normal compensation plan of employees. And members, with that pretty much walks you through what House File 5 contains.
All right, Representative Max, that has Representative Max, House File 5, with the A9 amendment and the oral amendment incorporated. We now have the bill before us. Discussion. Do that. Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Mack. There are some things in this bill that I actually agree with. A lot of the exemptions you're removing, you know, as I understood it, a lot of those were put in place because of the speed with which Mincher had to be up and running. And I certainly think that a lot of those exemptions have not served us well. So there are parts of this bill that I do support. I'm interested, though, in discussing, first of all, the Section 1 of the bill, your idea about having plans that are sold outside of the exchange be able to be eligible for the premium tax credits. It's pretty sparse what you've written here, and it kind of reminds me of what was what the Republican majority did a couple years ago, not 2 years ago, but during those 2 years when the GOP was in the majority in the House and Senate, when a lot of what went through the HHS committee seemed to be along the nature of here's something we want to do, Commissioner, you figure it out. And I think this is a little bit along those lines as well. It's one paragraph. It's one thing to tell the commissioner to get a waiver, but there are no details here. And when I look at this, and I'm going to ask you to kind of explain what you're trying to accomplish here, because I don't think that's at all clear. But when I look at trying to do this, all of the things we've been talking about how complicated our eligibility process is, and all of the bureaucracy that we have to try to figure out eligibility, and how hard it's been for Mincher to get off the ground and figure all of that out. And now it looks to me like you want to take that complicated bureaucracy and disseminate it all over so that you can go through that very complicated process from numerous different outlets. And to me, that looks like just taking what I frankly think may not be the best idea to start with, and just making it that much worse. So I'd really like to hear from you about what you're trying to accomplish in doing that, and you know, why you think that basically we should just be basically why the taxpayers should subsidize any plan anywhere that a person might buy.
Representative Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Liebling. I appreciate the question. I do realize that this portion of the bill will probably bring the most scrutiny and questions. And I'll start out with what we're trying to accomplish and then why I think this is the best way to go about it. And then, Mr. Chair, you can determine what's best, because, again, I know that this will be the part of the bill that probably merits the most questions, but I do know we have some testifiers also to this part of the bill and the bill at large, and can maybe go to that and then continue on with the questions.
Yep, Representative Mack, I thought we would do is just put the bill in the shape that you'd like it with the oral and the A9 amendment, and then general questions about the bill structure, and then we have a couple of amendments, and then we do have testifiers. So probably we'll move ahead with that at this time.
Sounds good. So, Mr. Chair, and to Representative Liebling's question, Representative Liebling, I think one of the things we have, well, some of us maybe thought 2 years ago and have learned over the past 2 years, is that Minshew took on a pretty monumental task, and we could all probably go round and round on how it could have been done different or what we've learned since then, but between the trying to process tax subsidies for private health plans on top of managing the very difficult task of our public programs and the county workers and all of those things. And so as we look at that, we'll particularly see that consumers, both in the public programs and the private market, have paid the price in terms of some of the inconveniences and challenges that they've navigated. And so what this waiver is trying to do is basically saying that we as legislators are not here to ensure that Minshew continues to exist, or that this one somewhat broken portal with, as we heard from the legislative auditor, we don't have a whole lot of hope at this point or a whole lot to point to that shows that it's going to get any better. And so my concern has been, why are we forcing consumers through a broken and frustrating system? And this waiver would allow for the Commissioner of Commerce, along with the Minshew Board and the Legislative Oversight Committee, so it wouldn't just be the Commissioner alone, but working in consultation, to apply for a federal government that would allow people to get the tax subsidies outside of the exchange, and basically say, you can purchase your health insurance where you see fit. You can go through your broker, you can go directly through the plan, or if Minshew provides the best shopping experience for you and your family, you can go through Minshew. But we are not going to force you to go through this system where, and you'll probably hear this later on today, where yes, the upfront experience, I know Mr. Lights from Minshew has said, as he's graded, you know, where we were in October of 2013 in terms of the upfront consumer experience at their computer screen has gotten marginally better. But certainly the back-end system from information getting from Minshew to the health plans is as bad as it's ever been, if not worse, where we have stories of people who are showing up to their doctor thinking that their insurance enrollment information is accurate, up to speed at their doctor's office, and nothing could be further from the truth. And on top of that, the plans are still jumping through enormous hoops, trying to make sure that they have correct enrollment information so that they can properly serve their customers. And so what this waiver is trying to get at is basically saying we should provide options, expanded options for consumers, expand choice, and expand access to the health plans that they want without having to go through the frustrating and awkward and somewhat inconvenient system of Minshew. And again, it's not preventing Minshew from doing this, but it's saying if Minshew needs to stand on its own 2 feet, provide the best shopping experience, and if they do, the market will move that way. But we shouldn't, as legislators, force people through that path to find their private health insurance, and that's what we're trying to accomplish with this waiver.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Mack, first of all, I think you may be mischaracterizing kind of where Minshew is right now. I think we do agree that the back office part of it, if we want to call it that, is still struggling. But your bill wouldn't do anything for the back office. If anything, it would make that part much worse. And you're not laying out even a path to get anywhere near to have the eligibility and all that figured out in different disseminated kinds of systems. So, you know, you've still got that. But I do think that you know, we have to remember that the auditor's report was talking about the initial rollout, and things have gotten much better from there. And so, but there are also other reasons, and I'm sure other members will want to speak to this as well, but there are other reasons that MNsure as an entity is better than buying insurance in other places. It's not only that you can get your tax, your premium tax credits there, it's that MNsure allows consumers to compare plans side by side and to shop in a way that really is minimizes, I guess, I'm not sure if I have my economic terms correct. My neighbor here will correct me if I'm wrong, but it has to do with the opportunity costs of shopping and having to go to one place and another place to figure out whether you're getting the best deal or whether a plan meets your needs is part of the reason that MNsure has been created. Now, just to be clear, I personally think we need to move away from the system of basically forcing people to buy private insurance. That's what I would prefer. I think the whole thing at some level is completely unnecessary and the wrong direction. But given that that's what we have, I think your idea actually multiplies the difficulties with it and doesn't do anything to make the consumer experience any better. So, you know, and I do think that just writing up one paragraph and saying that the Commissioner of Commerce, in consultation with whoever, shall develop a proposal. Boy, I hope you're prepared to allocate a whole lot of money to develop that proposal because, you know, and you sure have a lot of faith in their ability to do that. I mean, it just seems to me very unrealistic to say to the commissioner, I have an idea, now you go figure out how to make it work. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. And Representative Mack, I think we're going to go to amendments next. We just got a couple amendments. Do you have something you'd like to respond to?
Sure, Mr. Chair. I just want to respond to a couple of the things said and then move on to amendments. I guess, first point, I don't mean to mischaracterize the state of where things are at with MNsure. By any means, I have paid very close attention and have spent countless hours in conversation with the plans, MNsure, board members, the Department of Health and Human Services, trying to have a true grasp on where things are at. And again, I think the consumer experience at their computer screen signing up has gotten much better from where it was in October 2013. Absolutely. That being said, I don't think it could have gotten much worse from where we were at in October of 2013, so I think we only had one direction to go. But I will say that has moved along quite a bit. However, I will say, to the point about the back end, you know, right now, when it comes to the QHPs, what MNsure does is they essentially send an Excel spreadsheet to the plans, at which point the plans have to audit the information for accuracy, in which case very often they are spending quite a bit of time making sure that information is correct. Then they have to transfer that to a format that they can upload that info into. And then from there, they have to load it up into their system and transcribe it so that their systems can properly read it. And at that point, they're able to produce ID cards. And that's just a brief walkthrough. All of these things have multiple components, multiple steps. What my bill would do, I would disagree. I think it makes the back end much easier in the sense that, one, not as many people potentially would be forced through MNsure. And if somebody goes directly to their health plan to purchase their insurance, all that back end work that everybody's so busy scrambling trying to fix, and at this point there is no light at the end of the tunnel, whether you talk to Minute, whether you talk to our contractors, whether you talk to the plans or the people on the board, there is not a lot of light to point to at this point that the back end is getting any better, that the 834 forms are going to get through any faster anytime soon than they currently are. And it's creating a lot of work and a lot of inaccuracies for consumers and the information that they have. When we look at the processing of life events, we know that as of the end of February, there were over 600 life events from 2014 still unaddressed. We know that as of right now, there are over 3,000 life events just for 2015 that have to be addressed. I mean, Minsher is bogged down with so many of these problems, and I think that the waiver would alleviate some of that back-end work. If we allow for the avenue of individuals getting to go straight to their plans, the plans are able to process a life change of one of their consumers in 24 hours or less of knowing about the life change, and they have it turned around and processed for their consumers, versus about a three-month process that they're dealing with a consumer that comes to them through Minsher. And so I guess I would argue that the waiver, at least allowing this avenue, would create some relief for Minsher on their back end, and would certainly create relief for the plans if they could have the ability to have people come straight through them. In addition, and we can go more into this, I know we're going to get to amendments, but we know that there are processes in place by which the plans and Minsher can reconcile on the back end. We have emails and documentation from last April that when enrollments were way backed up, that there was communication from Minsher that people go directly to their plans, purchase what they needed to purchase if they were in the queue, and they'd have their tax subsidies retroactively adjusted to their premiums. So we know that those processes are in place. They have been used as a result of all of the problems of the last 2 years. And so there are mechanisms that are not as complicated as one might think to make this very possible. And this has come through conversations with the plans, with the board, and when I've asked for feedback from Minsher and the Minsher board, it's never been brought up that this could complicate their work, that this would make things much more difficult. I've been looking for feedback since January on this, and that has never been brought to my attention by anybody involved on the inner workings of this bill. If anything, it could create some significant relief, and I think free up Minsher to continue to focus on its core mission, and that is being the one front door that people can come to figure out what they're eligible for, and then get them going in the right direction. And so, Mr. Chair, with that, we can move on to other amendments, and I'm sure we'll come back to this very issue.
Yep. Thank you, Representative Mack. Our first amendment in the packet, members, is A1, the A1 amendment, and Representative Schultz offers the A1 amendment. Representative Schultz.
Yes, I'd like to move the A1 amendment. This is an amendment to strike Section 1 of House File 5.
All right. Members have A1 amendment in their packet and discussion to the amendment. Representative.
So I'd like to explain the amendment. Yeah. So my concerns about this way to allow individuals to buy their insurance off the exchange and qualify for subsidies and tax credits. So the biggest concern, well, first of all, people can buy their insurance off the exchange. We're not forcing anyone to buy their insurance on the exchange. They can buy it off the exchange, they just don't qualify for the subsidies. So that's just a clarification. Second of all, if we allow this to go forward, there's no guarantee that we're going to get a waiver. So many of these items, when I've read through the waiver requirements, may not be permissible to go forward through the 1332 waivers. The other big concern about this is verifying eligibility based on income data that you would have to provide and verify through the IRS, and that could be a privacy concern that many people would have, and they need to go to the Data Practices Committee to talk about that. But when you apply for a waiver, you need to show the same coverage and affordability, so it has to be very similar to what's approved through the ACA amendment in terms of what's covered and what's not covered, and the amount of cost sharing and out-of-pocket payment limits. And it really is a really big concern for me that if health plans are allowed to sell plans and people qualify for the subsidy off the exchange, health plans would have no reason to participate in Minsher, and it destroys the whole risk adjustment mechanism that you have. And this is how insurance works in healthcare, is that you pool all these risks together, and it should lower premiums the larger your pool gets, so you can risk adjust across health plans to address risk selection or adverse selection, where sick people might be selecting one plan over the other, but you can adjust for that, and it's not reflected in premiums. So my big concern is that it destroys that risk adjustment mechanism that's there on the exchange. I think we've set up MNsure, and remember this was an idea from the Heritage Foundation, conservative idea, so we could save money in both our public programs in the state, and we can save money on the commercial side because it eliminates that duplication, the administrative overhead of health plans. So I think we should go forward and improve the IT and the IT platform so we can actually realize savings for the state of Minnesota. And I believe the whole IT platform has problems because we delayed requesting federal funding to start the IT planning, and we had a short time frame. And I think over time that will improve and it will be more seamless. We'll be able to verify eligibility, et cetera. Because, you know, health plans aren't perfect either. There's problems when you try to get your insurance through a health plan as well, and they have problems with their IT platform as well. So we could experience a lot of the same problems when health plans try to verify eligibility and if a person qualifies for subsidies or changes their coverage levels. So that's just a few reasons why I think we do want to go for a 1332 waiver, and I'd like to see a bipartisan effort going for a waiver so we can innovate and improve MNsure and reduce our costs. But I'd like to see us work together on that, and I don't think this is the right approach right now to do that. And no one's having conversations with me about it. But I'd like to have conversations with Representative Mack and Representative Dean to do that. I just don't think this is the right approach right now.
Representative Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Schultz. Just a couple of comments. You know, when it comes to no guarantees, that is absolutely true. That's the case with any federal waiver. I sat through a three-hour meeting with the department the other day, and all the waivers that they have in process, spending a lot of man hours preparing for those waivers, waiting, planning. It's never a guarantee. That's the nature of a waiver. So I don't think that's a reason not to do it. Minnesota has countless examples of how we have asked for waivers, some successfully, some not. But the ones where it's been successful, Minnesota has been more innovative than the federal government would have otherwise allowed us to do. And so I think it's worth the fight because I think we could do it better than what the federal government is stipulating. In regards to mostly the four pillars that are spelled out by the ACA for 1332 waivers, I believe that this lives within all four parameters of those coverage covers at least as comprehensive as the exchange coverage, has to be same or superior cost-sharing protections, has to provide coverage for a comparable number of residents, and there's no increase in the federal deficit. And as I've worked with folks on this issue, this would live up to that. There are other states going for this same waiver. And members, in terms of the data piece, there's a few different mechanisms by which we've talked through how something like this could work. And again, this would be with work with the Commissioner of Commerce, the board members, and the Legislative Oversight Committee, but there are various mechanisms. Just to give you an example, one could be where MNsure still serves as that one front door, and that is where all of your tax information goes to ping off the federal hub, and then at that point, MNsure could provide a certificate or some documentation that then you take to your plan. The plan deducts that from your premium and then reports back to the federal government. And at the end of that, the federal government squares up with the plans at the end of the year. MNsure does not collect premiums now. All that is collected by the plans. And so this really doesn't have to be as complicated as some people would imagine or want to make it. There are plenty of processes that have already had to be used by MNsure just out of a point of crisis because of some of the disasters of the past 2 years. So we know that those possibilities are there. This would just make it more of a mainline approach. And again, with just allowing consumers choice and expediency when it comes to getting their insurance, which they have not been provided so far through MNsure. And they should have access to those tax subsidies whether or not they're going through the exchange. They're all taxpayers. And so I don't think that we should limit it to having to operate inside the exchange.
Thank you, Representative Mack. Other questions or discussion to the A1 Schultz Amendment? Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to Representative Mack, I wish you'd explain a little bit more how you see the premium tax credits working, because this is people providing their Social Security numbers, their tax information, and then it has to be intertwined with an IRS hub, which in a dynamic way, so that your premium tax credits can change over time. And I heard you say, well, you know, maybe we could do just a kind of a once paper thing and you get a certificate. But I don't think that that's really the way it's designed to ultimately work in terms of being a system that verifies people's income is linked together. And I think there's some data privacy concerns that I'd really like to hear your concerns about in terms of a consumer feeling like they have to call their insurance agent or their health plan company every time their hours get cut if they're a retail worker or something changes in their life. I mean, it's not a typical relationship that you would have either with your health plan or with a broker, and it requires a lot more interaction, it appears to me, and how are you envisioning that really working in the consumer's best interest, because they're at risk if things aren't adjusted appropriately.
Representative Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Loeffler. I don't see the data privacy concerns, because some of that private data about income and things like that under the scenario that I gave, and again, all these things would be paramount as a waiver was put together, but it could be done still at MNsure, where MNsure does the processing, it pings it against the federal hub, that data, and I mean, we won't go into this, but I think that there are a load of data concerns at MNsure and how this data is currently being handled. I'm not so sure it would be at any more risk if it went to the plans than it already is. But with that being said, that would still stay at MNsure. And much as what has been done over the past 2 years as a result of crisis, if the plans and MNsure have to reconcile on the back end a premium tax subsidy to a plan premium, those mechanisms are in place with proper documentation. And then just as in all cases of taxes, if there's an error or something wrong, that it would be subject to audit and everything else. But MNsure would still be the ones pinging the federal hub and then finding out the tax subsidy that somebody was eligible for, and whether it was a certificate, whether it was, some means by which that information, not with private data, not anything, but it certifies that they qualify to the number that MNsure calculated and the tax calculator qualified, that is then applied to premiums. The plans report that to the federal government, which obviously would also be able to align that with the federal hub to make sure that it's accurate and the correct amount was given. And then at the end of the year, there's another reconciling point where the federal government squares up with the plans. And so in my views, I don't think we should overcomplicate it too much, understanding that there have been processes in place for this very thing. And we might be able to hear some testimony on this to shed light on the people that are doing this on a regular basis and some of the realities that are already happening regardless of this waiver. And it's happening because they have to. They have no other choice because of the mess on the back end. And so I don't see the data privacy concerns.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mack, what I heard you describing was a whole lot of steps with a lot of back and forth, which is part of the challenge that we've had with the current system, getting it lined up, and it's getting lined up, is my understanding. But I do want to, at least on the record, say that in the presentations that I've heard, too, on the Legislative Auditor's Report, and in the report, he cites the data privacy as one of their biggest strengths, and they could find no evidence of any problem with anyone's personal data, which I don't think when you disperse it amongst lots of offices, lots of people across the state, that you're going to have that same kind of assurance. We've had even hospitals that have lost people's private data to subcontractors who've lost laptops, that sort of thing. And I do think that's a point of pride for us as well. And so I just want, for the public that are watching, at least our legislative auditor, in their independent and critical review of MNsure, said this is actually one of their strongest points. And I think this would actually turn it into perhaps one of the weakest points of the system. And I don't think that that's a step forward. And I also think that if you look at who the majority of the people are who are using MNsure, it's working poor people. They work for companies that don't offer health insurance as an employee package. They are, or they're self-employed, or they have to buy it because they're juggling a couple of part-time jobs, neither of which offer coverage on its own. These are the people who go on and off of Minnesota Care to private insurance to Minnesota Care. Maybe they get dropped down to MA, then they come back up to Minnesota Care. It's the nature of their lives and the places where they work that they are not in a stable economic situation. And MNsure, I think one of its strongest components, and we have to realize that the vast majority, it's 80 or 90%, I don't remember, are people who at some point are eligible on a public program. These people, if they went directly to a health plan and then they get their hours cut, then they have to go back to MNsure and readjust and see if they qualify for Minnesota Care, which would be cheaper. And then, you know, it gets to be around Thanksgiving and their hours go up at the local retail store. And, I mean, I think for the vast majority of people who we're serving, this would actually, for having them outside the system, would be a lot of complications, and I just don't see the benefit.
Representative Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Loeffler. And we can maybe continue to talk through some logistics offline. I think we might be missing the boat on some of this. Again, the data piece, the data won't go outside of MNsure. Right now, MNsure finds your gets your data, pings it against the federal hub, then applies a premium through the back end that hopefully at some point will accurately get to the plans. All the data would still stay right where it is right now. The only piece that would be different was a mechanism by which somebody could take that certification, not with any of their information, not with any of their data, and then go and apply it, have it applied to their plan premium. And they don't have to go through and purchase their plan through the exchange. And so, again, we don't have to belabor it. I guess I'm missing something there in terms of the data piece, because I'm not proposing for that data to go outside of MNsure under the way that this is written. I'm proposing that MNsure could still be the piece where you find out what you're eligible for, and then that information, just the dollar amount of what you're eligible for based on the IRS hub, what you're eligible for to have applied to your premiums, to reduce your premiums based on your tax credit. And I don't think it's a lot of back and forth, and maybe I got wordy in my explanation earlier, but it wouldn't be back and forth. You go to MNsure, find out what you're eligible for. You could then continue to shop on MNsure if you'd like, or you can take that information about what you qualify for to your plan, to your broker, and shop directly that way. There's really not any more back and forth. Certainly, I would think less under this proposal, but certainly not more than we currently have.
Thank you, Representative Mack. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In my opinion, this basically negates the intent of MNsure, and I do want a roll call on this.
Are you speaking in favor of the amendment or against
the amendment? I am against. I'm in favor of the amendment against the the bill.
Roll call having been requested, there will be a roll call. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Chair. If all the eligibility and verification of income data is happening in MNsure, what is the health plan doing then? Collecting the premium, enrolling them in a plan? It doesn't seem to be doing a lot, and none of that language is in the current bill. So you're just assuming that the commissioner is going to do it that way, or they're going to come up with a plan, but there's no direction of that in the bill. So this seems really more complicated now that we're bringing another party more involved into this process. And, you know, the OLA report just came out today auditing health plans, and they found that their subcontracts, they're really worried about privacy concerns with their current subcontracts. And if you guys recall the Aetna data breach, they were hacked and hundreds of thousands of personal identified data was released. And I don't think we've ever experienced that in the state level. So my feeling is that our system is much more secure than what's potentially happening in the commercial health plan side. So I agree with Representative Loeffler that there's privacy issues there. So I still don't think that this is going to be more efficient by allowing people to use subsidies off the exchange if we're still relying on
MnSure to identify eligibility, income eligibility, and subsidies and the premium amount.
Representative Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of comments in terms of what would the plans be doing now with this waiver. The plans would be doing what they've always done and what they do best. Plans are not, right now they're being asked to do things that they have never had to do, aren't necessarily supposed to do, but they are to come to the aid of MnSure. With a waiver like this, the plans would be enrolling consumers. And the only really different thing here would be they'd be applying a premium tax credit, essentially minusing that from the monthly premium, so that their members are paying the accurate amount based on what the ACA allows in premium tax credits. I guess I don't understand that comment. They would be doing what they've always done. It doesn't change a whole lot for the plans. And again, on the data piece, if you reference the auditor's report that came out today, keep in mind that auditor's report had to do with, again, the communication between DHS, our managed care, and the plans. The issue very often comes when there's multiple parties trying to serve these populations. That audit report entirely dealt with managed care, which is people who enroll through their counties, give very private information. That information has to get to the plans, and very often that's where the data breach happens or when there's data issues. It's not, that report did not necessarily solely lend itself to just the plans. It had to do with managed care and the disconnects in how managed care works, and that brings in DHS, the counties, the plans, and how managed care operates. And so I just want to clarify that, that auditor's report did not comment specifically on data just within the commercial market and how plans handle data within the commercial market. It was far from it. It was only within the managed care products. Members, again, to this bill, if you look at waiver proposals in the past, I understand one of the critiques is that it's one paragraph directing the commissioner. It also allocates that it would be along with the board and the Legislative Oversight Committee. And this is very often how waivers are put together moving forward. It instructs the commissioner, whoever you're asking to do it, to look into the federal waiver and see what options are there. And you just say, this is our goal. Our goal is to allow people to have tax subsidies outside of the exchange. Let's apply for a waiver that allows us to do that. And so this is not an outlier from how normal waivers move forward. So any characterization otherwise is not necessarily accurate, and I think that it's the right move forward, and it allows consumers more options, members, and that is the goal that I'm going after. So with that, I would ask for a no vote to the A1 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Mack. Roll call having been requested, there will be a roll call on the A1 amendment. The clerk will take the roll.
Mack.
No.
Peterson.
No.
Mullery?
Aye.
Albright?
No.
Allen?
Yes.
Backer?
No.
Baker?
No.
Dean?
Nope.
Fisher?
Yes.
Franson?
No.
Freiberg?
Yep.
Kelly?
Nope.
Liebling?
Yes.
Loeffler?
Yes.
Lomer?
No.
Mason?
Yes.
Moran?
Yes.
Pearson?
No.
Quam?
Nay.
Schumacher?
No.
Schultz?
Yes.
Zulas?
Nay.
There being 9 votes in favor, 13 opposed, the amendment is not adopted. All right, next up, members, we have the which one do we have? The A5 amendment.
Thank you.
Members, I'm going to withdraw the A5 amendment in the interest of time, and also I'm going to ask that this be introduced in the Commerce Committee. So we will move that in the interest of time. We have one more left, which is my A8 amendment. And I believe the A8 amendment goes to the issue of navigators. And it requires that navigators be subject to background checks. We had a lot of incidents with this in the rollout and kind of the accountability of the navigators that were brought on as a result of this. So that's the reason for bringing the amendment forward. Representative Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would be glad to accept the A8 amendment. This is something that we discussed a lot when MNSHRA was being created, thinking that this was an important safety piece and just a kind of a common sense approach to what these folks were going to be doing. So I would support the A8 amendment.
Discussion to the A8 amendment. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I don't really have any objection to it, but my question to you would be that if this goes on the bill, is the bill then going to go to either civil law or public safety? Because I would argue that it would really need to go to both. You know, I don't know, and maybe here's my question for you besides that, Mr. Chair, is kind of what do we have now in law? Or actually, maybe Mr. Chun would be the right person to ask that of if he knows right now, because I know this is not the first time we've talked about this subject, and I know that navigators already have some requirements and so on, so I guess I'd like to understand what this is doing that's different from current law. And but secondly, I do think it's very important that if this goes on the bill, that it goes to those other committees.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. Mr. Chun, do you have any recollection of where this currently is at with the law?
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, no, I don't. But I think I'd have to get back to you unless Ms. Olson is familiar with the issue.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, there's nothing in the Minnesota statutes that directly goes to background checks. There may be something in the MNSHRA policies. However, we would have to double check.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, and I was just told that there's something in rule about it. So if this indeed is really a change, that we're not doing background checks, and this amendment is calling for a complete criminal history, a full set of classifiable fingerprints, and then conducting this check and exchanging fingerprints with the Federal Bureau of Investigation, I think, Mr. Chair, that that's even more than we do right now for most of the DHS screening. I don't think we are submitting, unless they already have a multi-state criminal record and there's some reason DHS knows that, we are not submitting those to the FBI. So this goes well beyond what we currently require, I think, even for people who work directly with vulnerable adults in the state. So if this goes on the bill, and, you know, I'll support putting it on, but only if it's then going to go to these committees that will examine this, because I think it brings up some pretty significant data issues and that need to be looked at in other committees. So, Mr. Chair, would you be then sending it to these other committees?
Representative Liebling, the next stop for this bill is the Commerce Committee, and that will be up to the chairs and the author of where it proceeds from there. And we have we're kind of all our own navigators in terms of where we think the bill should go. So that would be up to primarily the bill's author working with the committee chairs. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and having been the person that had this in bill form the previous session and had discussion on that, it was not part of the original activity. There was some discussion that, well, it's up to the discretion. And I support this amendment because it ought not be who the head of MNSHRA is that determines this, because we've already had some transition there. And I think it's best that we have the protections because, as people pointed out, data privacy and other issues. So, no, this isn't an unusual thing, and it's a prudent thing to do, and I again support the amendment.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. My comment was actually about the earlier discussion about the navigating the process of this committee, and that you indicated that you were withdrawing the A5 amendment because you thought it was appropriate for commerce. And I would just say we've had testimony on the computer system that it was in part selected by and designed by to intertwine the eligibility systems of the Department of Human Services so that if someone added on a new infant and they would be eligible for the Women's Infant and Children Program to assist with the costs of nutritious food or formula, if that was appropriate, for that family, that they wouldn't have to go through a whole nother separate income verification, filling out forms process at a time when they're dealing with a newborn. And so I would ask you to, as we're voting on this next amendment, think about whether or not that was really your intent, because that's the way I took it, was that it would eliminate that option, which I think actually is in the consumer's best interest as well as that of the counties and the state in administrative streamlining.
All right. Is Mike Turpin available for testimony? Please come forward. Introduce yourself for the committee, and if you can address that or would like to, we would appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Turpin. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mike Turpin, General Counsel for Minsure. I did want to give just some background on the background study issue as it currently sits at Minsure. As you rightly correctly stated, that this was an issue of discussion early on in the enactment. Minsure took steps early on to implement in conjunction with the Department of Human Services via the NET study program, utilizing the current background study program that DHS implements through its licensing division. Currently, we utilize those criteria, and that's what the Department of Human Services reviews on our behalf, and then we do the background study through that mechanism. The tie-in to the navigator rule is via the certification mechanism that we have. So the rule identifies that we must certify navigators to be able to use, to be navigators. And one of the criteria is that they have to pass all privacy and security policies and procedures for Minsure. Additionally, they need to be identified as being authorized to have specific authority from the board directly to be able to access the Minsure system. In order to do that, one of the elements of that is having passed a background study. So this mechanism is the way that we have assured that all individuals that access that system have cleared the appropriate background study. Just as an additional point to raise as well, the Minsure Board reserved the right to take positions on legislative proposals, and that was not a position that was not an authority that they delegated down to the executive director. And one of the two proposals that they did support was to actually formalize in statute the use of 245C and the background study criteria identified there, and specifically that provision being that the Department of Human Services would be required to perform the 245C background study on all navigators, in-person assisters, and consumer application counselors.
Thank you, Mr. Turpin. All right.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Liebling.
So, Mr. Chair, I think it's pretty clear. Well, what I gathered from that is that they're already doing it, and it certainly, I think, would make some sense to codify that, and maybe that's kind of what your intent is here, but I think the language that you've got goes beyond codifying what he just explained and having DHS. I mean, I don't think it makes any sense to do more with somebody who wants to be a navigator than somebody who's going to have personal contact, intimate contact, perhaps with a vulnerable adult. And I would just suggest to you, I mean, if you want to put this on the bill, you may hear motions on the floor to make sure that it goes to the proper committees. But I just think that I don't think it's your intent to be, I certainly think your intent is one that I share with you, and I just would suggest that this isn't really the way to do it. This really ought to be maybe modified to just codify that they go through the DHS background study system.
Thank you, Representative Liebling, and we will be seeing this on many stops, and we'd be happy to chat with you about trying to make this more amenable, but we necessarily want to address this because we did have some problems with this rolling out. So I would just ask that members vote in favor of that so that we can provide a little bit more consumer protection. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. All right. Those are the amendments to the bill. We do have testifiers, and I would like to move to the testifiers at this time. And if we could have first up Bentley Graves from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce come down. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Graves. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Bentley Graves. I'm the Director of Healthcare and Transportation Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. As most of you know, the Chamber represents 2,300 businesses statewide of all sizes across the state, about half in the metro, half in greater Minnesota, but about 80% of our members have 100 employees or less. I want to thank Chair Mack for bringing this bill forward, but I particularly want to thank him for bringing a portion of the A9 Amendment forward having to do with active purchaser. As you all also may know, the Minnesota Chamber was an early supporter of the effort to undertake in Minnesota health insurance exchange. Rising health care costs are significant and constant concern for businesses across the state, and exchange to facilitate more competition and improve choice in the health insurance market was seen as a valuable new tool for our members. As a result, the Chamber was very involved in the public discussion surrounding the development of Minnesota's exchange and actively advocated for the establishment of an exchange model centered on choice and competition. However, we were deeply disappointed that the legislation establishing MNsure allowed the MNsure Board to establish an active purchaser process for products offered through the exchange in starting this year. The Chamber supports MNsure's role as a marketplace facilitator and strongly opposes its role as a purchaser or selector of health coverage. We believe that greater participation in MNsure on the part of health plans, not less, will lead to greater competition and choice for consumers. And we believe that the robust participation of Minnesota's health plans and the development of the 2014 and 2015 product offerings has proven this out. Minnesotans enjoy some of the lowest premiums in the country. No doubt there's room for improvement in the exchange, and certainly there are parts of this bill that seek to address that, some of those issues. But we don't believe that an active purchaser process is the appropriate tool to fix any of these problems, and we're very concerned that additional requirements layered on top of the already substantial requirements for participation in MNsure will only serve to limit both choice and competition by decreasing the number of products offered through the exchange. This would greatly limit the value and usefulness of MNsure, and it will threaten the viability of the healthy and competitive marketplace that has led to MNsure having premiums that are among the lowest in the nation. And I just want to also cite a recent study from Health Affairs in December 29th of last year that was actually done by several researchers from the University of Minnesota that looked at the difference in premiums in those states that used active purchaser versus those that used the clearinghouse model. And what they found was that there were significantly lower adjusted average premiums for all plans within each metal level compared to state-based marketplaces using active purchaser models and the federally facilitated partnership marketplaces. So essentially, you know, where those states used active purchaser, there were higher premiums than those that didn't, Minnesota being one of those that didn't choose to use its active purchaser authority. So I think that's an important benchmark for us to look at as discussions go forward about whether or not there's a need for active purchaser. But I'd also like to reference a couple other pieces of legislation that I hope will find their way into this conversation as this bill moves forward through the process. One is a bill, House File 1316 by Representative Albright, which would allow small employers access to the federal small business tax credit outside of the shop exchange. To date, shop has not been an effective place for small employers to go and provide insurance for their employees. But the issue is that shop is the only place that employers can go to gain the small employer tax credit. There are roughly about 30,000 businesses in Minnesota that could, by way of size, qualify for the tax credit that aren't currently accessing it because of the challenges of navigating shop. The second, and so this the bill would propose that the state pursue a waiver to allow access to the small employer tax credit outside of shop. And the second is House File 1381 that Representative Baker's introduced to require the release of MNsure's rates at least 30 days before open enrollment. Again, this is a tool we believe is helpful to both individuals and employers to give them the opportunity to sit down with their employees and figure out what their options are as far as health insurance goes. So with that, I appreciate the opportunity to come and speak for you this afternoon, and happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Graves. Next up, we have Chris Schneeman, and on deck, we have Catherine Commit. If Mr. Schneeman and Ms. Commit could come down, and then on second deck would be Rochelle Westland. Mr. Schneeman, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and begin with your testimony.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and Representative Mac. My name is Chris Schneeman. I am a certified MNsure agency owner, so that makes me kind of special, perhaps, huh? I'm also serve on the MNsure stakeholder group regarding brokers and agents, and have participated for many years as MNsure was being developed on the task force as organized by Governor Dayton leading up to that legislation. And I also want to point out that I'm an independent agent, and I think this is key to my comments, is that as an agent, I need to remind everybody that we are licensed. We are required to have continuing education. We are required to pass all of these checks that you had previously talked about. But most important is that we only get paid, we only earn our living when we leave a client satisfied. They have to be happy they spent time with us. And we sell a very difficult product, health insurance, right? So this isn't an easy task. But if the client is not satisfied with us, they go elsewhere, they don't buy anything, and we don't get paid. So because of that, we kind of have a unique relationship with our customer base. A couple of comments. The first is that is very obvious, but another reminder that on January 1st of 2014, health care changed. It changed not in just in MNsure, but it changed in the entire health insurance marketplace. Guaranteed issue is the law of the land. Pre-existing conditions are not allowed. That's the law of the land. And as a result of that, buying a health insurance policy became much easier. This was a great thing for agents and for our customers. We knew we could actually sell a policy to somebody whether they were sick or healthy. So that was a great thing. MNsure, not a great experience. And as a result of that, many of us in our agent community have looked at it and said, this is just not a fair situation here. Here we've got access to product on a guarantee issue basis, but if you happen to be lower income, you had to run through this juggernaut of mistakes and failing systems in order to get access to your APTC. It just wasn't fair based on your economic status that you had to put up with a mechanism like this. So from that standpoint, agents are very much in support of the notion that regardless of your economic status, you should be able to go out and buy the same products that anybody else does. So an example, not just because of the technology issue, but if you were needing to buy a policy in 2014 and it was important to you that you had access to Rochester Mail as an in-network provider, you could buy one product from one carrier. You didn't have choice. You got to buy a $3,000 deductible aware product from Blue Cross Blue Shield, right? If you weren't needing assistance with that product, right, you have many choices to be able to solve your problem, right? So MNsure constrained the market for low-income people. It did not constrain it for people who had means and didn't need that APC to pay premium. Another comment. The federal law and Minnesota law both state that an insurance policy premium is going to be exactly the same whether you purchase it through MNsure or whether you buy it direct from a carrier. That $3,000 deductible from Blue Cross policy that I talked about a minute ago, right? It's priced the same whether you did it through MNsure or not. The only difference was whether or not you needed help paying the premium. So if you didn't need help, you got the policy. Another example of the efficiency is the thing is that we had a lot of calls coming in during open enrollment, and we had to filter those. They say, do you want assistance with your premium? And if the customer said, I really don't, then we say, don't go to MNsure. You should go directly to the carrier. And for example, Preferred One, we would log in, we'd fill out that basic information, no health information, and we would have a confirmation of an effective date within an hour. That's not through MNsure. If we took that same application and ran it through the MNsure mechanism, you might be able to see ID cards 6 months later, if it was accurate. So I just explain this because this, for agents, is tremendously time-consuming and frustrating because, remember, we're trying to satisfy our customer. We want to give them a good experience. So to that end, we strongly endorse this proposal. The next point is that one of the components of the bill talks about...
Sorry to interrupt.
Yep.
We are in a tight time frame. We're going to be voting on this bill at 4:27. We want to leave plenty of room for member questions. So if you wouldn't mind, please.
Thank you, Chairman.
Getting it, but I do really appreciate particularly your on-the-ground reporting for what it's actually like for folks out there. So we do appreciate that, but unfortunately, we are under quite a bit of time constraint.
Thank you very much.
All right, Catherine Commit, Ms. Commit. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with the testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Catherine Commit, and I represent the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. I'll be really brief. I just appreciate that Representative Mack has brought a bill forward to try something different. Her earlier comments about the challenges and difficulties that have been in place with MNsure are accurate, I would say. And I just have a couple of suggestions for the committee to think about as you continue to discuss how to improve MNsure. And those are that we think MNsure should do only what is minimally necessary to help Minnesotans enrolling in coverage. They should stop doing things that they don't need to be doing and just focus on how to make sure that the enrollment process works, those basic functions to get Minnesotans enrolled into healthcare coverage. A second thing would be we'd like to improve the board composition, and I know Representative Mack's amendment does some of that by expanding the board. I think that's that could be good to have additional input on the board, but we also think that it would be important to have members who have relevant experience and expertise in health insurance matters and IT systems like benefits administration, healthcare finance, healthcare purchasing, etc. We think it would be a good idea to require Senate approval of board members. That just provides another check on making sure that they are vetted appropriately. It helps to eliminate conflicts of interest by the board and ensures appointees are put through the same process as those who serve on other state agencies and boards. We also suggest that MNsure follow the full rulemaking requirements under Chapter 14. For the first year, MNsure was permitted to follow the expedited rulemaking authority. Now that MNsure is got about 2 years under its belt, those initial extenuating circumstances no longer exist, and so we believe MNsure should be required to follow the regular rulemaking process going forward to ensure full stakeholder input as required by law. We would also very much like to see a repeal of the 3.5% premium tax. We argue that that MNsure is a public good. It's a tool to increase access to health care coverage for Minnesotans. And as such, MNsure should be financed through a broad-based funding mechanism that is transparent, scalable to enrollment, and predictable. This would provide greater legislative oversight of how MNsure is funded and what the appropriate funding levels should be. I know you're not talking about funding in here, but I just wanted to get that on the record. You've already heard a little bit about repealing the active purchaser requirement. We support that change. And just three other things. One is to create a broker portal. This is something Mr. Stamen probably didn't get a chance to say this, but we think that MNsure should immediately create a broker portal to allow agents and brokers the ability to help individual clients to update and modify their coverage, which could go a long way to address some of the concerns that Representative Mack talked about with these life changes or changes of circumstances that are backlogged at MNsure. We would the ability to do what we call direct enrollment. And this change would allow a carrier to assist an individual who comes directly to the carrier, so somebody who just contacts the plan directly, to be able to enroll on the exchange, including those individuals who wish to obtain subsidies for which they may be eligible. And then lastly, I would just close by saying I think it might be worth looking at tying any additional spending of federal dollars to verified improvements in functionality at MNSHR prior to the next open enrollment period. So I'll just leave it at that, and thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Ms. Commit. We appreciate your being here. Also, we have Rochelle Westland. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. And again, if we could keep it to 2-3 minutes, we would appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair, ladies and gentlemen of the committee. My name is Rochelle Westland, and I'm the Health and Human Services Policy Analyst with the Association of Minnesota Counties. We'd like to thank you for this opportunity to speak in favor of some of the provisions that are contained in House File 5, specifically the inclusion of counties on the MNSHR board. With 90% of MNSHR enrollees on public programs or eligible for public programs, the MNSHR technology system is a primary use for public health. It is critical that individuals working with persons enrolling at the highest rate are working very closely with the decisions that are being made that affect the county systems. Furthermore, this system is serving as a basis for the public services programs as they continue to modernize, making the county impact even more important. So we really appreciate the opportunity to have a voice on the board that helps develop these systems and these programs. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Westland. We appreciate you being here. Is there anyone in the audience who'd like to testify on this bill? Seeing no takers, Representative Quam. Not here. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. I think that one of the key main changes here is in what's being called the active purchaser, which is where the MNSHR board gets to try and make sure that the products that it offers are quality products that best serve us and that gets us a competitive price in a market that's stable and in the best interest of the people of Minnesota who would be served by this. And if you look at some of the deletions on page 4, line 4.13, the board shall consistently and uniformly apply all policies and procedures and any requirements, standards, or criteria to all health carriers and health plans. And for those of us who serve on the committee that met earlier today, we heard the Office of Legislative Auditor talk about how we even have problems with our medical assistance and other public programs in terms of the health plans differently interpreting the accounting standards, the reporting standards. Even our Office of Legislative Auditor had challenges sort of sorting through their different product lines and how they were allocating costs to various things. And I think we need. And then under 4.5, there's market stability and adverse selection. We've already run into market stability issues because, and people have criticized it, I don't know if it's right or wrong, I'm not an actuary, but preferred one, undercut the market just to get major market share at an unsustainable rate. And their company, I think it was reported in the paper, lost $138 million. Now, the people who put their health and their health care in the lives of that company, you know, are lucky it was a big enough company to be able to handle that and to ride the wave. But that has not always been true, and it's been a long time. But we actually have had insurance companies in Minnesota go under and leave their enrollees without the coverage that they've been paid money for. Affordability is number one. I think that's the whole reason why all of this was set up. And by focusing on affordability, we ended up with the lowest rates in the nation. We ended up with people telling us how they were saving $300, $400, $500 a month. And we have a system of quality and value that assures that there's going to be some continuity of care when people go through this, and that they're going to have choices that are not just a lot of choice, but they're going to have choices that have been vetted by someone to be the best policies possible in Minnesota to meet their interests. And I think that these are values that should guide the MNSHR board as it works with the market to develop products in the future. And I think that taking this out at this point would be tremendously premature, because I think we've already run into problems that demonstrate the reasons why we want a MNSURE board that's looking at these kind of values and using them to guide them as they put together their policies and procedures. And I think that there are some people who want to turn this into a boogeyman that it is not. I think it's basic core values that we all honor and want in the marketplace, and to be reflected in the MNSURE products that are brought forward.
Thank you. Representative Liebling.
Well, thanks, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Loeffler must have been reading my mind. I'd like to move an oral amendment, and it would be to delete lines 3.5 through lines 4.32, and that basically deletes the active purchase. It's the takes out the section that deletes the active selector language. So
all
it's
right.
Just what she was speaking about, and Mr. Chair, I'd like to just explain that briefly. I know we're under a little bit of a time crunch here.
Okay.
The active purchaser, first of all, members and the public need to understand, this is a power that the board has that hasn't been used yet. It hasn't been used because the board in its discretion felt that either that it didn't need to or that the time wasn't right as things were getting set up. So I think that we see that the board has exercised significant discretion. But the reason that the board was given active purchaser authority in the beginning, as I understand it, is to give consumers the same benefit that large companies have. A large company, well, first of all, let's just acknowledge that most Minnesotans do not get their insurance through the individual insurance market. We're talking about a small slice of Minnesotans. Most people who get some kind of private insurance are getting it through their employer. And large employers have the ability to say to insurance companies, we want a policy that does X, Y, and Z. Bring us a product that does certain things. And they can get bids from different companies and get a policy that best suits their needs. They can bargain over the price and they can bargain over what's in the policy. And the purpose of active selector or active purchaser language is to give MNSURE the ability to do that on behalf of people who have to be in the individual market. Otherwise, they are at the mercy of whatever policies those companies decide to offer. Now, having them compete on MNSURE is a benefit in the first place. Companies are competing head-to-head. They know consumers can look at that shelf and decide which product they want, and that drives change in itself. But having the ability for this active purchaser at some point to be able to drive change that will be in the benefit of people buying individual policies is a great thing for us to give. That's a great tool to have in the toolbox. And so it doesn't make sense to me to just get rid of that tool when it hasn't even been used yet. This is a consumer-friendly thing. Consumers would still be able to buy, especially in the context of Representative Mack's bill, which would allow consumers to use those premium tax credits and buy outside of the exchange. It makes it even more important for the exchange to have the power to drive quality or get better plans just the way an employer would be able to do. And those of you who are small business people probably know it's really hard as a small employer to do that. But if you're a large employer and you're getting buying plans for your employees, you have a lot of power in the marketplace. And that's what this is meant to do. So I think that deleting it is not only premature, it's a big mistake. And so, Mr. Chair, I would like a roll call on this one, please.
All right. Roll call having been requested, there will be a roll call. Representative Liebling, if you could just please give me those line numbers again. Mr. Chun, do you have those? Sure. Can you please explain that?
And then Mr. Chair, just a technical, I guess, correction to the amendment. I think you'd want to retain line 3.5 because you're inserting some other sections in the amendment that are being retained. So it would be to delete lines 3.6 through 4.32.
4.32.
And Mr. Chair, can I, while you're just getting that in order, I'll just speak to the amendment briefly.
Representative Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I appreciate the comments on this particular proposal, and I know a lot of this are similar conversations that we had 2 years ago when this was initially put in, but I just want to make sure that members understand we already have a very rigorous process, both here in the state and federally, by which plans that go to market are approved at the Department of Commerce. And as we argued about it 2 years ago, I don't understand necessarily why the board would need this added authority to determine what can and cannot be sold inside the market, or the exchange, excuse me. And furthermore, I think that this provision would drive plans away from the market. It would shrink competitiveness at some point under the way this is written. The board could determine and shrink down how many products are sold to a very small number, and therefore exacerbating the problems that our testifier earlier said that Minture has contracted the market for people of low socioeconomic means. People of higher means can go to the outside plans and have a much broader plethora of plans to choose from. Minture has, to a certain extent, already contracted some of that choice, and certainly under an active purchaser option, that would only get worse. And so I don't want people left with this idea that all of these things, affordability, quality, and value of health plans, promotion of prevention, that that's a new concept, that that's not being done elsewhere. The only means would be Minture having the active purchaser piece. Those are all things the Department of Commerce already does and looks at. That's the rigor plans already have to put their products through just to get them to market. There is no need for another piece. I would argue that the Department of Commerce does that well. I guess I'd like to hear if there's disagreement with that, but I don't see why we would need another hoop. It would increase costs to do this, and it would shrink the market and only hurt competition and accessibility and affordability for people within the exchange. So I think it would be a disservice to consumers to allow this to go. So I would oppose the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Mack. Representative Liebling moves her oral amendment. Roll call having been requested, there will be a roll call. The clerk will take the roll.
Mack.
No.
Peterson.
No.
Mallory.
Aye.
Albright.
No.
Backer. Oh, I'm sorry, Allen. Is that? Backer?
No.
Baker?
No.
Dean?
Nope.
Fisher?
Yes.
Franson?
No.
Fabric?
Aye, aye.
Kelly?
No.
Liebling?
Yes.
Loeffler?
Yes.
Wilmer?
No.
Mason?
Yes.
Moran?
Yes.
Pearson?
No.
Quam?
Nine.
Schumacher?
No.
Schultz?
Yes.
Zulas?
Nay.
There being 13 votes in favor, 8 opposed, or excuse me, 13 votes opposed, 8 in favor, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Further discussion, Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. The committee task force, the group that did the original plan and report that Minsure was generated from, on, I think it's page 6, but a third of the way down, there's a column, or there's a header that says recommendations. The first recommendation on that was consistency of plans inside and outside the exchange. And some of the controversial parts of this bill are very much in line with the recommendations from that group that later on, several of them joined the board of Minsure. So that consistency and that recommendation are good reasons to support this bill, along with the fact that many of the other components would have avoided some of the issues we incurred during MNsure. So I just hope all of us can look at the good of the bill and the good of the people and vote yes.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to point out that the oral amendment failed, but, you know, in that active purchaser language, it says item 6, line 4.6, meaningful choices and access. So you've just eliminated possibly having meaningful choices and access. And I think, you know, part of this active purchaser model is to make sure that in greater Minnesota and rural areas that they have a choice of providers and plans. And now, you know, now we may not guarantee that. My other point, I just want to go on record saying that with the composition of the board, just from my reading of the language of the conflict of interest, statute 10A.07, it looks like if you put an insurance producer on the board, that they're not going to be able to have any discussion or vote based on the conflict of interest language. So my suggestion in the future is maybe put someone who's retired from the health insurance industry on the board so they can actually inform the board and participate in discussion. So that's just a friendly amendment that you can do with whatever you will like.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. The last person on the list that we have is Representative Albright. I'd like to go to Representative Albright and then have Representative Mack make concluding remarks unless folks would like to come back after session this evening. If that's appropriate, I see that it is. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I kind of feel like I'm living a real-life example of Groundhog Day. It wasn't 2 years ago that for most of us in this room, we were debating this very issue. And I can't help be struck by the comments that have been bantied around this table. I've heard about streamlined a process. I find that hard to fathom when we've heard about a 62-page workaround that the counties have to deal with as it would pertain to getting people signed up for a life change event. I've heard about data security when not too long ago 2,000 agents and their data were compromised by the very agency that has been held up on a pillar for their data security. You know, I think in years to come, we may very likely see business schools take this under advisement for a text case for such issues as dealing with cognitive dissonance, buyer's remorse, organizational dysfunction, or leadership, for that matter. And the comments made about that they don't like choice and that active purchaser constrains the free marketplace. It constrains not only consumer, but it constrains the organizations who would like to provide their products and services to the consumer. And as has been said in studies, it raises premiums. I can't imagine the choices that would be available if we went forward with an active purchaser certification. You talk about adverse selection, the very nature of MNsure. You've taken out underwriting. You want to talk about adverse selection? Your adverse selection is against the providers themselves. No wonder that they're all mixed up with their pricing schedules. So, you know, I'm just struck by the very nature of the argument that, you know, we need to work harder. We need to spend more money on a system that is failed. The OLA report came out, albeit just a year ago. I don't see much evidence that there's been much changed about that. And so at the end of the day, there's a ship that's been launched. It hasn't even made it out of harbor. In my opinion, it's sunk right by the dock. And what you've done is you've spent 2 years and $200 million of taxpayer-funded money from this state, and you got nothing to show for it.
Representative Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Appreciate the time today and the thoughtful discussion. This bill has several more stops, but I do appreciate certainly the last 2 years have been a trying time for the state, taxpayers, and MNsure as we've tried to navigate this, and this bill is an attempt to try to set some course corrections, and certainly with the waiver, expand access for consumers and the ability to shop and find the best care for themselves and their families as they see fit. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would appreciate the support of the committee.
Representative Mack renews her motion that House File 5 be referred to the Committee on Commerce. House File 5 as amended be recommended to be re-referred under the Committee on Commerce and Regulatory Reform. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no?
No.
No.
The motion prevails and House File 5 is referred to the Committee on Commerce Regulatory Reform. Thank you, members. We are adjourned.